the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Could you put your hands up if you found that silence a little uncomfortable? Could you do me a favour and just talk to the person next to you for 2 minutes? Why does silence sometimes feel uncomfortable? Thank you. Oh, I'm relieved that's over. I'm really, really excited to be talking about silence this evening. It really, really means a lot to me. When Emma, my wife, and I first got together, one of the things that really excited us in our first meetings was our love of God and wanting to put God first. But we had one slightly awkward discussion, not as awkward as just then, but we got to the discussion of church, and I asked Emma, what's the most important thing to you in a church service? And she asked me the same question, and our answers were completely different. Her answer was good teaching, and my answer was silence. And I have to be honest with you that the first time I came to Belmont, it was a bit of a culture shock. And it just so happened that there wasn't communion in that particular service. And I felt a bit shocked at the end of it because I felt like I hadn't been given a chance to connect with God. I felt like I hadn't had a quiet time just to be still in God's presence. And so it really does feel like such an honour to be able to talk a little bit about silence now. I'm not an expert on this at all. I don't find silence easy. I'd love to be able to say to you that I have silent meditation every day, but it's not true. I wish I did. I'm trying to get better at it. Coming from the Catholic tradition, one of the things, with all the many failings of the Catholic Church, one of the things that's always attracted me within that tradition is the tradition of silence within the monastic traditions. And I just want to share with you a little bit this evening of my experience of that. So what we're going to do this evening is we're going to start with the Bible and just a few selected references to silence in the Bible. I'm going to very briefly talk to you about just one history of a tradition of silence from the very early church all the way through to today. We're going to have a go at silence twice, and we're going to have a little bit of discussion and feedback, and then I want us to be really honest about the challenges of praying with silence, think about the value of praying with silence, be honest about the dangers, and then think about how we go on from here. And there are a couple of books that I'd like to mention to you and recommend. So starting with the Bible, I want to start in the Old Testament with 1 Kings chapter 19. I want to start there because poor old Elijah, you'll know the story, poor old Elijah's had a really, really tough time. It's not easy being a prophet. You know that things are going bad because he leaves his servant behind and alone and depressed he sets off into the wilderness. And on his very first night in the wilderness, he lies down and he asks God if he could die. But God doesn't let him die. God sustains him with food and water, and he travels for 40 days and nights until he reaches Mount Horeb. And here he has an encounter with God. Now, he might have been expecting something like Moses' encounter with God when he was on the mountain. And you'll remember that that involved thunder, lightning, and a loud trumpet blast. But Elijah's experience is different. Because as I'm sure you'll remember, God is not in the great wind, the earthquake, or the fire, but in the still small voice, or as some Bibles translate it, sheer silence. Moving on to the New Testament, I think it's really interesting that Zacharias, when he can't quite accept what God is doing and that Elizabeth is to have a child, that his tongue is stilled for several months. In Luke chapter 1, verse 22. Elizabeth, too, she withdraws. Now, that's partly because that was the custom for a pregnant woman to do that. But I think it was also because she needed to meditate on what God was doing in her life. And then, of course, there's Mary. And when Mary had heard that incredible news from the angel Gabriel, she didn't go and blurt it out to everybody. But Luke chapter 2, verse 19 tells us, Mary treasured all these things, pondering them in her heart. That was the first thing she did. What about Jesus? There are a surprising number of references to Jesus seeking solitude, and I would suggest probably silence as well that comes with solitude. The 40 days and nights in the desert before his public ministry that we hear of at the very beginning of Matthew chapter 4. You'll remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 16, Jesus taught that prayer should be done in secret. After hearing about John the Baptist's death, and also when the crowds are pursuing him, Jesus seeks solitude, he seeks silence. Mark tells us that Jesus frequently, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. So there are frequent references to that, and that quote there was from Mark chapter 1, verse 35. And then knowing that, it's not really surprising that before Jesus' greatest test, before the crucifixion, what did he do? He went to the Garden of Gethsemane and privately, quietly kneeled and prayed in the darkness. And looking at the Psalms, the oldest prayer book in the world, the verse from Psalm 46, which is verse 10, "Be still and know that I am God." But I think another really interesting psalm is Psalm 65, the very beginning of it. In many of our Bibles, it's translated something like, "Praise awaits you, O God." But in some of the translations from the Hebrew, it's, "Silence is praise to you, O God." So I think there's a real encouragement from Scripture to not be afraid of silence and to really spend that time with God in silence. We are going to have a go at some silence in just a moment, but just before we do that, I'd like to very, very briefly just trace the development of one tradition of silence, and it is only one. There are so many ways of being silent with God. You can be silent, and spiritual journaling can happen, where you're just writing down your prayers and your thoughts and your reflections. There's Lectio Divina, there's just being quiet and praying alone. There are so many different ways of being silent. There's Ignatian spirituality, engaging the imagination. But I just want to talk to you about one, and in a way it's the most stark form of silence, because really there are two forms of silence. There's the outer silence, that's the easy bit, just stop talking and try and find somewhere where there isn't very much noise. But then there's the interior silence. And I just want to make it really clear that there's quite a difference between sort of some types of meditation in Buddhism, for example, and Christian meditation. There are some types of meditation where the goal is to empty your mind. But in Christian meditation, it's not to empty your mind, but it's to focus on just God. I just want to quickly chart the development of one form of it. A few hundred years after Jesus' time on earth, there was a persecution of Christians by Decius. And there was a large number of people, partly for that reason, who fled to the desert. They're known as the Desert Fathers, Desert Mothers as well, because women were involved. Now, they partly went into the desert to escape persecution, but that wasn't the only reason. Because the really interesting thing is that after the persecution had finished, many of them stayed and actually went deeper into the desert in Egypt. And they're known as the Desert Fathers and Mothers. And their legendary pioneer was Antony of Egypt. And there are some really incredible stories about these people. Quite an odd bunch, really. I think it's fascinating. And if you'd like to find out more about them, I'd recommend Silence and Honey Cakes by Rowan Williams, which talks a lot about what these men and women got up to. There was Simeon, for example, was one of these desert fathers, and some of you might know that he got so exasperated because these desert fathers went out into the desert for solitude, and the problem is people followed them because they thought, oh, this is interesting, maybe we could learn from them. So there was this kind of spiritual tourism which was defeating the object of what these people were trying to do. So Simeon, what he did is he put himself on a pillar. And as time went on, the pillar got higher and higher so that he could get bothered less and less. The local bishop, one of the local bishops, was really concerned about these, in some cases, quite unruly men and women. So he asked somebody called John Cassian, a young man from present-day Romania, to go out and interview these desert monks. And we actually have access to the compilation of all of those interviews in John Cassian's work. And that's called Conferences of the Fathers. About a generation later, after that compilation had been made, Benedict wrote his monastic rule. And the really interesting transition in terms of the monastic tradition is that Benedict thought that it was not healthy to live in solitude, but it was better to live in community, and brought back a little bit of that balance. But he didn't lose the silence, and in fact suggested that the Conferences of the Fathers by John Cassian would be read at mealtimes for the monks. And if you are interested in that, I've got a copy of the Rule of Saint Benedict, if you'd like to borrow it. It's not very long. But what I find really interesting is what it starts with. The Rule of Saint Benedict starts with one word: listen. And you can't really listen unless you're silent. And that tradition carried on through the Dark Ages and has been held within the monastic traditions, taken to real extremes sometimes, like the Trappist monks take a vow of silence. The Carthusians live in hermitages, they live in little cells, and many of them take a vow of silence, not speaking at all, some of them. I just want to draw your attention to somebody called John Mayne, a Benedictine monk, who in 1969 tried to rediscover this type of silent prayer and share it with the world. And it was in particular the 10th conference that Cassian writes about that John Mayne was inspired by. And that's what I want us to try now. We're going to have a period of silence. The thing is, this could not be simpler. It's really, really simple. But it's not easy. And can I just emphasize, this is one way of doing silence. Now, it might be this is not for you. That's fine. do what you like in the silence, but I'm just going to make a recommendation of one thing that you can try. So the idea is that what we're going to do is we're going to have a very brief moment of stilling ourselves, which I will lead you through. And that's the easy bit, that's the outer silence. And that will just be making sure we're sitting comfortably, and that will just be being as quiet as we can. We're still going to hear noises. We're going to hear the projectors. That's fine. We're going to hear noises outside. There'll be the odd noise in here. That's all right. That's fine. But what we're going to have a go at is we're going to have a go at stilling our minds. We're going to have a go at that interior silence. And here's the challenge, is that we just focus on one thing. I would recommend maybe just the name Jesus, just the precious name of Jesus. John Main recommends Maranatha, come Lord Jesus. It could be my Lord and my God. It could even be a quote, that quote from the psalm, be still and know that I am God, whatever you are comfortable with, maybe just Father. But the idea is that with your breath, you just concentrate on that. So if you choose Jesus, maybe the first part of the name Jesus as you breathe in, and the last part as you breathe out. So Jesus. Jesus. Now, of course, you're not saying that aloud. You're saying that in your heart as you breathe. Okay. So we're going to have a go. Just to kind of still ourselves, could I just invite you just to stand where you are? Okay. If your back will permit it, and only if your back is in good enough condition, could I just invite you just to just sort of at your hip, just to kind of gently drop down, watch the people in front of you, but just kind of drop down. And then very slowly just pull yourself back up and just let your arms kind of dangle. Let them just be really relaxed at your side. And then just drop down again. And then slowly pull yourself up. Okay, and just take a moment just to kind of shake off your arms. Take a moment maybe just to get rid of any frustrations you might have. Just clench your fists for a moment and just hold it and let go. Okay, and if you'd like to take a seat again. Now as you sit down, if you could just try and keep your back upright. Try not to be slumped in your chair. Try not to lean back too much. I make sure that you've got a straight spine. And we're going to have a go now at 5 minutes of silence. I'm going to talk you through it. And then we're going to have that period of silence together, and I will bring us out of that period of silence. And I promise you it won't be more than 5 minutes, but it will feel like longer. Okay, if you'd like to just gently close your eyes. And just take a moment just to still yourself, and let's just make ourselves fully available to God. And just, first of all, just concentrate on the sounds that you can hear outside of this building. You can hear some traffic. Now just take a moment just to concentrate on the sounds you can hear in this space. Sound of the projectors, perhaps. now just gently bring your attention to your prayer word. Perhaps the precious name of Jesus. And silently in your heart, say the first part as you breathe in. And the second part as you breathe out. And as other thoughts come to your mind, as they will, gently return to your prayer word. When you're ready, you'd like to gently open your eyes again. That was actually less than 5 minutes. What I'd invite you to do now, maybe in small groups of three or four, is just to talk about that. How was that? How did you find it? Can we do that just for 5 minutes, please? Thank you very much for all of those. Just a couple of comments on some of those. I think one thing that I think we do really well at Belmont with regard to silence is communion. And I think there's a real beautiful silence when we have communion. And just to pick up a little bit on some of the things that have been said, I think this type of silent prayer is incredibly useful for preparing for other types of worship. An Augustinian monk, Hilary Hilton, said that this type of prayer deepens your delight in other types of worship. So it doesn't stand on its own, but it kind of prepares the ground. And I think it's really important for us to kind of prepare the ground when we come to services. And I think we enter into those worship songs so much more fully when we've had that. Also, just the comment as well about trying not to sort of make it about what we think. I think one of the beautiful things in my mind about this type of prayer is it's not actually that we pray, it's that we become a prayer. And Jesus said that we should love God with all our hearts, all our souls, and all our might. And I think that's part of it. It's not what you're thinking, it is you. You are giving yourself. And also just there's a real paradox here with this type of prayer, and this comes out in the Desert Fathers and all of their wisdom. This type of prayer, there's a call to faithfulness, not success. There's a call to faithfulness and not success. And the paradox is, for me, I've had some of the richest feelings of God's grace doing this type of prayer, because I'm so bad at it. Because I think in the silence there's no escape. You can't hide behind a beautiful worship song. You can't hide behind all the images we have of who we are. It's just you. And I think the reality is, when we try and do this kind of meditation, our minds are, some people have described it as, you know, our minds are like Mexican jumping beans, or they're like a tree full of monkeys, or it's really, really hard. And actually, what tends to come to the fore is really trivial things. What am I going to eat tonight? What about work tomorrow? Have I done this? I've forgotten that. Or, why is Jamie wearing what he's wearing? Wasn't he wearing that last week? Or whatever it is. Those are the kind of thoughts that come in. But also, the thought we're left with, just us and our usual thought patterns. Those are the things that come back. And the slightly darker side of our sinful nature, which is being judgmental, thinking negative things about other people, that is what floods in. But the point is, it makes us aware of our need for God's grace. So as Augustine said, we need to be like a stepping stone to God. We need to first be real with ourselves to be able to make that step to God and just realize our need for his grace. One of the things that C.S. Lewis said about prayer, and I think he preceded most of his prayers with this, is may it be the real I who speaks, and may it be the real thou that I speak to. This kind of silence is about, you know, you've got nothing to hide behind, and you realize, you know, who you are and why we need God's grace. And I think the other thing that's really important about this is just one side of the coin. If we just focused on this, it wouldn't be very balanced. You know, we need the active side as well. And Pete Gregg talks about prayer and action as being like breathing in and breathing out. You need a balance and you need both. Mother Teresa said an awful lot about silence, and this kind of prayer. And we know that she was very active as well. And for her, this is what empowered her. This is how she really experienced the love of God that she could share with others. Some contemplatives have said that when in Mark's Gospel it talks about Jesus going into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights, that actually the very, very beginning of that in Mark's Gospel tells you everything you need to know about contemplative prayer. Because there are three things that are mentioned at the very beginning. One is that the Spirit led Jesus into the wilderness. So, you know, we can in our human natures be reluctant to be silent. So Jesus was led by the Spirit. And then it talks about Jesus being with the beasts in the wilderness. And I think those kind of, you know, also those sort of metaphorical beasts really come out when we're silent. And in some of the paintings of Antony of Egypt, if you look at those paintings, you see Antony and he's surrounded by very ugly looking demons. And in fact, that phrase that we often use when we talk about our inner demons, that comes from the Desert Fathers. That's where it originates from. So one of the things about this is it just makes us realize our desperate need for God and his grace. In a moment, I'd just like to share with you a few quotes that I think bring out some of these key themes. And then what I'd invite us to do is maybe end this evening's service in quite an unusual way, to maybe end it by holding on to silence. And if people want to stay and be silent, to please do that. If people want to just stay here and be silent, just to do that. But if people want to go, you know, please feel free to go. But if we could try and really just hold on to and preserve that silence in this space after the service, that would be really good. So just before we have a look at those, quotes. There are a couple of dangers with this, I think, that I want to flag up. The first is there can be a risk that we fall into the temptation of pride and think, oh, I'm really good at this. And we start to think that it's us and that we're earning God's grace. And that's not it at all. There's a risk of being self-absorbed, that we concentrate so much on our silent meditation that we forget our duties to the world out there. There's also a risk that actually, if the silence is forced upon us, it can feel very isolating and make us feel very far from the love of the Father rather than close to it. Richard Foster is very clear on this, and he says that if people are quite new to the Christian faith, that they should think twice about, you know, entering into this kind of prayer. He says that you need a kind of maturity to know something of the spiritual landscape before you enter into this kind of prayer, because there is a vulnerability in it. There's also a risk that we're just playing to our character and our disposition. A really fantastic book on this that I'd really recommend, that Phil told Emma and I about, is Sacred Pathways, that I've got a copy of here. And the interesting thing about Sacred Pathways is it kind of suggests that just like we have different personality types, like Myers-Briggs and things like that, that maybe it's the same in terms of our spirituality and our preferred way of connecting with God. And there's a danger that actually it's just you're really comfortable with silence. Thomas Merton, quite a famous contemplative Christian who was a monk, he really upset all the monks in his monastery, because one day he turned around to all of them and he said, "You're not contemplatives, you're just introverts." And I think there's a little bit of truth in that, that this can just be a way of escaping conversation. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think we need to be honest about, you know, why we enter into this. So it really is just one way. It is just one way of praying. And I love something that my grandmother always said, which was, "Pray as you can, not as you can't. So, you know, I do say again that if you struggle with this or this doesn't help you connect with God, it really doesn't matter. There are plenty of other ways of connecting. Final thing, just before we move on to the quotes, is and as you will already know, there's a real strength of tradition of this within the monastic tradition, but it's completely accessible to all of us. And there are a lot of examples of people seeking that silence and getting it in very busy lives. Susanna Wesley, famously, with her five children, bringing up her five children, things were very busy, always very noisy. And I'm sure many of you have heard this, that she would put her apron over her head, and then the children knew she was having a time of quiet prayer to not disturb her. So there's one example of how you can find silence in the busyness. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I think, is a fascinating person to consider on this. And especially a letter that he wrote to his on his godson's christening in 1944 from prison, where he talks about how sometimes with our words we lose our way, and words lose their power and they lose their meaning. And he seems to be pointing towards this kind of radical silence that's then followed by action and justice. So there's a practical consideration, you know, maybe a prayer room, and if there's a noisy clock in there, to remove it. You know, that's the kind of practical bit to consider, but then there's kind of the interior silence as well. And I think one of the other dangers to be aware of is just, to the outsider, this can seem like being so solemn that it's joyless, and that's a danger. So I think we need to be aware of that. We'll just have a look now at some quotes that will bring out some of these themes. Here's a quote from John Mayne, who I spoke about, who's was quite influential in founding with Lawrence Freeman the World Community for Christian Meditation. But if you just take a moment to read that for yourself, it just reminds us of how difficult it is and how ultimately it's a reminder of our need for God's grace. So it really is incredibly simple. There's nothing clever about this particular type of silent prayer. But just because it's simple doesn't mean that it's easy. That's Richard Foster talking about how it really frees us from judging others. This kind of discipline. We evaluate people, judge people, condemn people. We devour people with our words. Silence is one of the deepest disciplines of the spirit, simply because it puts the stopper on that. I'm particularly fond of this quote from Mother Teresa, because obviously she was known for being really active in putting the gospel into practice. We need to find God, and he cannot be found in noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence. See how nature, trees, flowers, grass grow in silence. See the stars, the moon, and the sun, how they move in silence. The more we receive in silent prayer, the more we can give in our active life. We need silence to be able to touch souls. The essential thing is not what we say, but what God says to us and through us. All our words will be useless unless they come from within. Words which do not give the light of Christ increase the darkness. I'm aware of the fact that our time is just about up. We won't go through that now, but if you would like a copy of this quote from C.S. Lewis, an extract from a letter to an American friend, I think this says an awful lot about silence as well. I'd be very happy to pass that on to you if you'd like to read it. Just wanted to quickly touch upon the media. In 2007, there was a remarkable film created called Into Great Silence. And there's no clever editing. It just films the monks at a Carthusian monastery in the Alps. And there's a 10-minute sequence of a monk just cutting carrots. But you really get the depth of the silence in the place. There was also, some of you might remember, there was a reality TV program called The Monastery, set at Worth Abbey. That's fascinating to look at, see the effect that silence had on five people taken from very different backgrounds. There was also The Big Silence that was set at St. Bino's in Wales. And again, that was just the effect that silence had on people. And it's remarkable how many people came to God or an experience of God just through being silent. And lastly, just before we enter into our final period of silence, I think you're familiar already with the book Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster. I mentioned Sacred Pathways. I would strongly, strongly recommend that to you. But I'd also just like to mention Gordon MacDonald and his book Ordering Your Private World. I was given a copy of that by a friend, and I really would recommend it. There's a chapter in there about not needing props, and it talks a lot about silence and how that can help us in our relationship with God. And then finally, there's a book called Finding Sanctuary, written by Abbot Christopher, in response to that series, The Monastery, where he talks about the need our world has for silence, and that there's a kind of poverty without it. We're going to close now, I really would invite you just to hold on to some silence now. If you need to go, please go, that's absolutely fine, but if we could just save conversations for outside of this room, that would be fantastic. And feel free just to enter into silence now.